Speaking of this afternoon, I don't know why. I mean, not so rare. So quite often find myself thinking about trees, particularly trees in relation to, not only Buddhism, but a whole kind of archetypal realm. Of course, trees not only play a tremendously important part in the life and myth of the Buddha. We won't go into that particularly. Sure, many of you are aware of how important trees are in his life. Of course, they also play a very important part, both in a mythology, Norse mythology, people have, and of course in Christian theology and many spiritual traditions, we find the tree as a central archetypal symbol. And you could say within Buddhism, the trees cry to the Buddha, archetypally cry to the Buddha. The Buddha takes his place under the tree, which is already existing. We get, the image we use of the Bodhi tree that the Buddha seats, the Buddha to be seats himself under is a mature tree. So maybe even, certainly hundreds of years old, if not thousands. I don't know how long Bodhi trees live for. I think they're quite a long-lived tree. So probably the tree he sat under, I'm speaking mythologically, but the tree he sat under has been there maybe a thousand or more years. And which is such an important symbol because, there's many reasons actually, but put very crudely, it unites heaven and earth. It draws down light, it draws the makes the volatile fix, and releases the fix into the volatile hermeneutically speaking. So it draws down the light. Which it, through photosynthesis, so it does this quite literally actually, because through the process of photosynthesis, it makes into a nutriment for itself. And of course, it goes up from the earth and evaporates that off back into the air. So there's this exchange going on. So this very much mirrors the posture. So take your posture, if you haven't already, if we're just going to do a short meditation. So when the posture, what we're trying to do, this might or might not sound a little bit esoteric, but we're releasing downwards, actually, from the crown of the head. We're trying to imagine releasing from the crown or even above the crown to the root. And we're drawing up or releasing upwards from the root to the crown. So we're reproducing this basic hermeneutic action of drawing down heaven into earth and releasing earth into heaven. And the posture itself understood as bridging earth and heaven, or the material and the non-material, the spiritual and the material. And at the center of this process, we'll be talking about a bit more later on in the week, is the heart, where this sort of meets. Let's have a sense of the posture. So when we make the posture, and it is a continuous making, in some traditions, all we're doing really is a continuous making of the posture. So this is done with the breath. Nearly all the work we do always done with regret. Regret keeps it grounded, if you like. It stops the question yesterday about fantasy and the difference between fantasy and imagination. But actually, the regret helps keep it grounded in the imaginal rather than allowing things to become fantasy. Fantasy is usually uprooted. It's just spirit, if you like. It hasn't got any, we had that real component of gravity, defying gravity, fantasy. Well, imagination has some ground to it. So as you breathe in and out, see if you can imagine this process. Jane, don't take this too literally. It's imagined happening through the central channel. In some traditions, the central channel is imagined as a vibrant deep blue. And it sometimes runs concurrent with the spine, it encompasses the spine and is just in front of the spine. It's running right through the core of the body from the root between your anus and genitals, right through the core of your body. And it's sort of fountaining out of the crown. But it's going both ways, so it's drawing light down and releasing matter up. This is a basic exchange. Of course, this is an imaginative exchange. We don't have to worry about whether it's literally true. We're not working with the literal here. But there's so many traditions use something very similar. We can certainly say it's experientially true. Let your faith relax. Release in the leg. They're rooting down into the earth. They can have become open to the earth energy along with the root. And we're drawing up all the way from the root. Just in a playful way, just imagine drawing up that cool, dark, feminine energy up through the body. Right up to the crown. At the same time, we're drawing down golden light. Right down into the earth. So there's this exchange going on as we breathe in and out. It's just the fancy way of saying, notice that your body's breathing. And with this, you don't want to do this without the actual breath, because then it just becomes a fantasy. When we do it with the breath, it anchors it into the actual energetics of the body. Your face popping up. Let your legs release. Imagine your spine, serpentine, fluid, electric in your body. Linking the earth bones of the pelvis, the sky bones of your skull. Imagine the sky above you. Deep, moist earth below you. And the exquisite, abundant world all around you. right in the middle of it is your heart. Or just sit or whatever. Don't try and make too much of these images. Just let them work. Don't work them. Let them work on you if they want to. Don't rip on them. Just let them be there. Anchored by your physical experience, your in-breath and out-breath. Sit for a few minutes of our body in the world. Sit to also having some awareness, sitting with others. The poet says, we did not come into this exquisite world to hold ourselves hostage from love. the last couple of minutes, keep the posture and just stop making any effort at all. Now we just rely on the posture. What happens when you stop trying to control your experience in any way? When she's ready, but I'm just going to share a couple of words about the group that will come next.
Yes, it helps to unmute yourself when you go into the group so people can hear.